This is the September 22nd edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Kirk Kimmel of AgMarket.net, Wayne Nelson from L&M Commodities, and Merrill Crowley of AgTraderTalk.com. You may listen to the whole of our program anytime you'd like. You can find it on our website at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. Let's begin our discussion, Kirk Kimmel, by taking a look at some of the macroeconomics, and Merrill, I want to come to you on this as well as it relates to crude oil to begin with. That price tag has dropped substantially since the middle of the year, and I'm wondering whether it really has much of an impact on the rest of the commodities.
Well, initially you think about crude oil or gasoline demand, and basically vacation season's over with, so gasoline demand's going to go down. We flip from gasoline demand to heating oil as they stock up for this winter and so forth. The big news is the strategic reserve. They let a lot of barrels out above $100 a barrel. The plan is to add and refill those reserves as we approach $80 a barrel. The key in news-wise is the worldwide economy. There's fears that the worldwide economy could slow in through here. China particularly has not been importing or using as much energy on the crude oil side of the sector here. So the energy sector is taking a little breather here. But boy, I think crude oil below 80 bucks would be a good buy.
Let's stay with the macroeconomics. Of course, crude oil. This week, the Federal Reserve raised again interest rates by 0.75 points. And then we have the war in Ukraine and Russia. What makes most difference to you?
I think right now it's the interest rate increase. The war in Ukraine is an ongoing thing. We got to figure out how much Putin is actually trying to bluff his way through and how much he actually means when he talks about using the nukes. So right now I think he's in a pretty bad situation with India saying to him that they need to stop the war. Erdogan from Turkey said the same thing, and I think Xi said he needed to do something to stop the war. So he's kind of on he's kind of out there by himself. He doesn't really have anybody backing him, and I think he's worried about his future. As far as the fuels and everything, with the macro situation where it is, we're seeing demand back off. People can't afford a lot of things, and so they're cutting back on fuel. They're cutting back on the crude, and Kurt nailed it on the head with China. China, with their shutting down their whole situation for COVID, with the absolute zero COVID situation, they don't have the need for crude that they once had either.
Interest rates, I think, are interesting as it relates to the whole of the economy and what it does as it relates to commodities. You talk about an interest rate hike, and I think it puts it at 3.5% or 4% in total. At this point, I'm wondering, given historical interest rates in the United States, not at 0% certainly, how much of a difference will this make going forward?
Well, Todd, some of us can remember 21 to 23% interest rates, and that really stopped this economy and made it hard to live. You know, we're going up to the point now where, unfortunately, we've had such inflation along the way, it's really slowing down home purchases, home building, car buying, a lot of things around the country. Now, we're still at a much higher inflation rate, and they say, you know, basically they said we're going to keep raising rates until we can get that it slows down, we get to 2% inflation. Well, I hate to say it, but that's going to be pretty devastating to this economy because it's going to slow down business. It's going to take jobs away. You know, right now, inflation, that's when there's more money than there is goods out there. And we're already, if you stop and think, supply side chain is very short in America here now. We don't have chips to get all the cars and trucks out. We don't have this. We don't have that. You go to order something, it's not in my size. So it's going to really cause a lot of discomfort the way it goes. And, you know, right now we're starting to get back up in employment here, but they say we're going to get down to unemployment if we keep raising interest rates here. The last thing we need is people, number one, that can't afford what's going on with a job, let alone people without a job. How are we going to take care of all those people?
It's just all confusing. I mean, here you are. nobody has any money, but we got all this money causing inflation. You turn back the clock 2 years ago, we had unemployment. That was bad. We need to get unemployment down low. Now we got unemployment low. That's bad. We got to get people fired and have no unemployment. So it's just a roller coaster ride in through here, and it's going to be quite emotional here as we try to sort this out over the next 2 to 3 years.
I'd like you three of you to try to sort something else out for me. I've been thinking a lot, and I ask this question all the time of the folks with me on the Closing Market Report, or have been for the last month or so, about the price of inputs and whether producers for the 2023 growing season need to find a risk management tool to handle those. And from my perspective, and I asked my brother about this, about the price of anhydrous ammonia and whether they'd locked it in. He gave me the price, and he wanted to know if that was because I thought the price of corn would go down. And I said, no, that's not the reason. That I had a range for the price of corn, and 2023 corn was above the top end of my range, and I thought that that was a good reason to go ahead and lock in. So what I want to know, and I'll give you mine, which is 380 to 580, and next year's corn is at 630, what your ranges are, wide ranges, for corn, and what producers, if anything, should do about pricing inputs.
Well, Todd, the ranges are very wide as we look at this now. I'm going to say that you're probably pretty close. I think you're in the just below $4 to probably somewhere between $6 and $7 is where we can maybe go. The difference being right now is we have to take and look, because if, and when I say if, the world economy goes into a recession, and China does not continue to buy from us, South America produces quite well, and the other countries are too poor to buy, what prices can we go to and still afford to pay for anhydrous at the price it's at? I think Gary Schnitke, I think that Matt Bennett on the air the other day, it's been talked about and talked about. If you're going to price expensive anhydrous, price at least 20% or whatever percent you figure that it's going to take to cover it in the corn. And you can do it in many different ways, whether you want to just plain make a cash sale, whether you want to sell some calls or sell some puts, sell some, you know, do whatever you do. But you need to have a bottom put in the corn market if you're going to pay this sort of price for anhydrous. And I don't think there's any question that that's the right thing. Now, will it be the most money-making thing in a year? But you will still be in business.
Well, there are a lot of opportunities for puts to help cover your costs if the way they set right now, and of course we don't know what they're going to be. I think it was, Elaine Cupp said on Market to Market that, but anyway, she said that she had done studies in the seasonal to buy fertilizer is now. And actually, we're getting a little late because it was the last part of August, first part of Sep. So you're going to have to look to price that. And I think it's a good idea from what they said at the U of I when they said you need to do some pricing of your grain as well, along with your pricing of a fertilizer. I know a guy that has done work for years and has really captured most of his area where he's at by simply when you buy fertilizer, you price some of your grain. Now, how that works for you, that's, you got to pencil it out. You got to find that out on your own, because each operation is different. But I do think the opportunity is there. And if you think it's just going to go up, that's your microeconomics. Your major or macroeconomics are sitting there, and they can push you much lower. And there's, you can look back to 1930, there was a 20% decline in production, but prices declined about 28%. You can go back to 2008, and prices declined as well, even though we had a shorter crop. So the proof is there that this is going to hurt. It's just going to depend on how bad the macro markets are going to be.
By the way, if you want to catch Market to Market, you can do that every Sunday on our companion station at 11:30 a.m. And Elaine Cupp and many of the regulars that we have on the air here show up on that program as well. Kurt Kimmel, your answer?
Yeah, one thing we had to change company-wide, we teamed up with FagMarket.net. And one of the reasons we did that is the technology they have and a lot of research they have. They go the extra mile, but they have this marketing app on there. It's just slick as a whistle. And as you start to use this marketing app, you've got right at your fingertips what ifs and everything, but these guys are dead right. You start to put in your input cost, particularly nitrogen this fall and seed and so forth, all of a sudden you've got a bottom line you need to achieve there. And cost of production is kind of a moving target, but we're dialing that in more as we move forward here on the 23 crop. Well, to add to what these guys said is we're taking the approach to have a price floor and leave your side up open somewhat. We like the strategy of not doing any worse than last year. Last year, your spring price was $5.90. What it's going to bring this spring, I don't know, but what we're doing is buying March short-dated $6 put options. To help pay for that, we're selling some March $7 short-dated call options above that. So we're putting in that price floor $6, and we're hedging that in. Those expire in mid-February. That gets you into the insurance pricing window in there. And I think that's an excellent opportunity to stay flexible, but kind of lock a floor in on the bottom side.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the demand side of the marketplace. We'll start with corn, talk about ethanol, we'll talk about the livestock side, and then we'll come back around to the soybean side and discuss what China has been doing or maybe not doing as it relates to the marketplace and what that demand really looks like. Demand for ethanol had a rough week this week. How's it faring at this time, and what are your expectations?
Well, part of that was shutdowns for to maintain the facilities. The other part of that is they're having to price some pretty expensive corn and get farmers to provide it. So, in that respect, the basis levels are coming down as we get closer to harvest. I know a lot of commercials are expecting harvest to provide them some cheaper corn, and I think we could get into that. So if I understand your question correctly, I think that we're going to see ethanol struggle. We're going to see livestock feed start to struggle somewhat here. Right now we have the demand. We have the lack of hay, but we don't have people buying the product. Your demand is falling off. Corn demand, we're at 50% of commitments that we were compared to last year. Now, soybean demand, we're pretty good. We're about 3 million metric ton higher than last year. And I got off the subject with corn. But what I'm getting at is that your demand, prices are supposed to cure demand and encourage production. And with the way the South American people are gearing up, I think that's what you're going to see.
Livestock sector in good condition at this point or not?
Well, they're panicking. The coverage is not there. If you're a livestock operation and you've got some grain on the farm you're raising, you're pretty well covered. But if you're a feedlot or a poultry situation where you got to buy feed, they've been praying every night for some harvest pressure to get some grain lower here to get that book. They're uncovered in through here. Feedlot guys are talking about $6.50. If you got $1.50 fats, $6.50 corn, that's doable. They feel the poultry guys have gotten a little bit more room. Clear back before the rally, they talked about $8 corn to put them out of business. So the poultry guys are in pretty good shape. Hog guys is kind of stuck in the middle there. So they need some coverage here. They're going to be eager buyers here. We saw some silage come off here to kind of get them through, get that in the bunker in through there. So definitely livestock feed uses is going to be there underneath the marketplace.
On the soy side, the complex is used for the crush, for bean meal, protein, livestock feed, vegetable oils, renewable diesel. And then, of course, the big one is the export. In the state of Illinois, 3 of every 4 rows of crop go out through the export market, or 75%. Nationally, that number is about 60%. Can that market be maintained?
That's the big question. Like I say, we have seen China really, really back off. We have some good early sales this year looking for that. But China is being, we know they went to Argentina over the last week. You know, we sold them a couple loads. They sold them 10 or 12 loads. We know that they're expanding acreage in South America and Brazil. And, it looks like they're going to get some rain. Argentina is continuing to look somewhat dry here for right now. And they actually cut down what they're going to possibly produce here today in one of the guys that assess what they're going to do in that way. But I think South America themselves are going to be producing quite a bit. We've been told by a lot of the people out there when they're talking about it, we're going to be really hurting for exports until January about. And after January, they look for some of these numbers to pick up and do whatever. But China has been publicizing they're going to use a certain percentage, a lower protein percentage in their feeds to feed it and feed more of their feed wheat and some of their corn that they're producing over there and like that. But you have to remember, too, the Yangtze Valley has had a terrible, terrible, terrible drought. And we're not sure what they have and what they don't have and what do they have in their bins and how good a quality is that. That's a lot of big questions, and will they come in there? We got other problems, too. Let's look around here. There's a lot of countries that would like to buy something right now, and we're out of price. They don't have money. I mean, it's just like Russia was talking about shutting down the pathway out of the Ukraine there because they weren't shipping it to poor countries. Well, we ship it to countries that pay, especially when you're in the middle of a war and you need money to finance it. So, but that didn't go. But I mean, there is a lot of question marks up in the air. Is there going to be aid to some of these poor countries? Will the depression be worldwide? Will a recession set in and get worse? It's really the U.S. is the one that's sort of in the situation where we have tight stocks. The rest of the world isn't in quite as tight of stocks as we are.
Soybean supply and demand and what it looks like on the world market to you.
Soybeans for pesos. That's what broke loose a lot of beans out of Argentina, offering them about 200 pesos per dollar. And when the market's running right about 120 to 140. So we got soybeans for pesos, and that sucked up about 3.45 million metric tons, I believe, that China bought straight off of them. That comes off there about 5.5 million metric tons that they need in October, they usually buy. So they're pretty well set where they're at right now with the beans that they have bought. Now, the problem gets to be is usually Argentine sells that because they sell it after they do the breakdown of it with the products and sell the products to make more money. But they're so in need of shipping to make money to help their economy that they pulled this program. Well, it was such a great, it works so well that they're going to cancel it because they can't afford it anymore. Now, what's going to happen down the road? That's the big question. Somewhere in this time, we're going to need oil, we're going to need meal, and we're going to need beans. And the Argentine supply is about 60% gone. From what I understand, that the Argentine says their farmers are 60% sold on the old crop, so we got to wait to new crop. They're also about 60, 62% sold on corn. So where are we going to get our beans from? You know what I'm saying? It's going to cause a problem later down the road where the shortage may come later than right now.
When the three of you talk to producers on the phone, are they still friendly to bullish the marketplace?
Yeah, pretty much so. Except for these early premiums. Guys went after that, and they moved a lot across the scale if they could get that early premium. But the rest is going to go in the bin. It's going to go in storage. One, they have some cash flow to work with. They're not needing cash right now. Number two, they're looking at wanting to capture some basis improvement up front. When you look at the board, it's flat across. But however, when you look at your local cash bid versus the processor there, it feels like the storage is going to pay this year, at least going into the year end. After that, it's going to depend on that southern hemisphere on what type of crop and weather pattern they have going into January.
Is this a 3 to 4 month marketing time frame that producers really have to work with, given the South American crop, if it's in good condition by the time we get to January?
Well, that's going to all depend. Like you say, if Argentina's all gone and whatever, I think that we will see some very aggressive shipments out of Brazil when we can. But I think, in all honesty, the premiums are going to come, your base, good basis levels are going to come here in the fall. We've had this coming into there. There's a lot of talk of doing bull spreads to replace stuff you sell rather than buying the deferred and thinking that July is going to really go up. They're wanting to stay front month, going down through it. Well, that's what your cash traders are talking about. And I think that it's going to be very crazy along the way. But as far as farmers' attitude right now, they want to hold, except for the places where they're getting the dollar to $2. I mean, I know one of my farmers got $2 a premium for his beans he hauled in, you know, just like 10 days ago, and he got, you know, $17 cash for his beans, and that's awful good, and they're selling them. But otherwise, the guys down in the south that are getting very short crops of beans, very short crops of corn, they've turned around and they bought back on the board and got killed the last 2 days. So, you know, the buyback deal maybe isn't what they're looking for. But all in all, this is a very bullish group of farmers out there right now, because they've looked at the tight basis levels here and they feel that the producers and end users want this crop bad.
Look at history. History tells you get a big rally and then it sells off. Well, that didn't happen last year, so it's kind of a unique situation. So we got another rally this year. And they're talking about the third year for La Nina, so weather could be a problem again. So in the meantime, between now and where we have some crop coming from South America, things are going to be tight. And that could provide an opportunity, like you said, Todd, in the first quarter or second of next year, as well as the last quarter of this year. We haven't seen the harvest pressure yet. I came down from Watsika, went across through the country. I couldn't find anybody going. A lot of beans are going to be closed, maybe go tomorrow, or not tomorrow, next week. And a lot of corn might go next week. With anywhere from 3.5 to 5.5 a point drying, that corn's going to sit for a while. So the pressure's going to come later this year than what we normally see it. Interestingly, if you go back to 2010, we had a low in June, not in July like we had this year, but the market rallied and kept going up through harvest in that year. It went up to about the end of the September, dropped about 14% for corn and 9% for beans. So I'm still looking for some sort of harvest pressure to hit, and that's what I'm looking forward to buying.
All right, so given all of this, if producers are still feeling friendly to bullish the marketplace, there's potential risk that is in place. La Nina may or may not enter its third year. The Brazilians are likely to plant a very big crop. They are likely also to get rain in the next week and a half to make that work. What should producers do about marketing corn and soybeans? And I'm guessing before they go through the field, do they need to make additional sales?
I don't think it would be a bad idea, but it all breaks down to what kind of crop did you have? What are your expenses? Did you get cheap fertilizer? Did you have to pay up for fertilizer? You've got to push the pencil. You've got to come up with the numbers that work for you. And so until you get those numbers that we can work with, it's really hard to say.
Yeah, there's just a lot of moving parts here. Everybody's different. Is it on-farm storage, off-farm storage? What percentage are you already sold? You got to sort through that. One thing for commercial storage, what I've been looking at and want to incorporate, is help pay for commercial storage. These March regular call options, $8 or 15 cents, I want to be a seller of a call. It's a marginable position. It's risky, but as long as you have crop in the bin, it's kind of a hedge there to help pay. The only way that's going to ding you real bad is if corn goes to $8. I want to do a cereal option actually in the January, February. Those expire a little closer to year end to help pay for that minimum storage. So there's a trade-off. Stock market guys has been doing this strategy for years. They'll buy a stock at $20 a share. They'll sell a $25 call for like $2. The market goes higher to $30. They're kicked out at $25. They keep the $2. If the market goes nowhere, they keep $2. That's helped make these high returns in some of these stock positions here is by using some of these strategies. The last thing you want to do, and it's going to happen, it happens every year, Friday afternoon, 1 o'clock, 15, 20 minutes before the market closes, somebody will call us. I've got between now and 1:20 to make a decision, do I store or do I sell?
And you tell them, I'm not sure. But the whole thing along with like that is along the way, I think, you know, you have to look at the psyche of the person that asked the question. Is he a person that can take the heat if it goes against him or whatever? And I think that's one thing. And I think this year, depending on what the basis levels are, is whether we say yes or no to that question. Because I think if we can sell at a good basis, then we can come back in very easily and do some options against it. The big thing is, and you know, we were all around when options started trading again, and they weren't there. And we used to be able to do a corn option for a dime, and it was a quarter for a bean option. And now it's about the we've upped it to that. You know, the bean options are somewhere 50 cents to 75 cents, and the corn options are 30 to 40 cents. And it makes it a lot harder to make the same decisions, but yet we're at higher prices, and everything goes that way. The strategy still works the same, and I think that you have to be able to look at that. I think that there's going to be a way. Selling calls like Kurt recommended there, you have to have the idea and understanding that if I'm selling those against corn in the bin, I hope that I'm making, that Kurt's calling me every day for margin call because my whole bin is going up in value. That's hard for a lot of people to realize. And I think that maybe we just have to somehow ingrain that or put an article in every in farm doc and every place else. If you have corn or beans stored and you sell a call above the market where you think that it might go, but probably won't go much higher than that, you want to be making margin calls.
Now, one final topic. We've talked a little, but not a lot, about the war in Ukraine, the problems that Vladimir Putin is creating there and across the planet. This involves natural gas and energy supplies going into Germany and into the western part of Europe. He may put pressure on them during the winter months in particular. He has now that he's decided to mobilize some 300,000 men to the armed forces in Russia, a potential issue within the country where they're not very happy about it, apparently, and are really coming into the streets, which is a bit surprising because they know full well that they're likely to go to prison and then to the front line still, I think. So I'm trying to figure out what calculus you use on this as it relates to commodities and how much wheat, barley, other grains, and oil seeds, sunflower, rapeseed, might come out of the marketplace. We've dealt with it as it relates to the Black Sea, but not quite as we related to the Russian supplies.
Well, that's true to some extent, but we made it this year. We had, 25 to maybe 50% of what they normally grow out of Ukraine. Russia has a huge wheat crop. I think 100 million metric ton is what they're talking. And so wheat is not a problem. Our dollar is going to hurt us some, especially with corn and beans. But wheat can be substituted for corn. You've seen the wheat jump based on some of the talk, but stop and think about it. With the talk they've had and some of the things that you would think coming from 300,000 men being put into the line, you would think that the wheat prices should go up a lot more than they have. And if you look at their market, that market is kind of slow. It's not really moving very fast. So I'm not sure the war problem is the problem that it was. We always find a way around problems. When you're bullish a market, you're short human ingenuity. And the human ingenuity finds a way to plant the grain, to ship the grain, to take care of the problems. And it's price that helps us do that.
So basically you're telling me this is a Katrina situation where the markets opened up 3 days later, despite the fact that New Orleans was closed mostly as a port. We were shipping grain out of that port 3 days after Katrina hit. What problems does this create in your mind?
Oh, it's huge. It's a nightmare. As a producer, you don't realize how much risk is involved here. I mean, this is a world event we cannot control. It's like we've always worried about weather. Now we're worried about world situations. We're in a situation where Putin, if he does what he wants to do, the grain market's going to go sharply higher. If Putin's taken out, the market's going lower. That's the bottom line. And how do you figure this world supply-demand balance sheet with this annexing and this area of war? Is it Ukrainian grain or is it Russian grain? And you know, there's just a ton of moving parts here. But the other thing that kind of bothers me more than anything is Putin and the premier of China are kind of buddy-buddy, and that's not good.
It's a mess, is the best way to put it. But, I mean, all in all, I'm amazed that they allowed Ukraine to be shipping grain out through this mess. When do you help your enemy finance the war against you? This has been amazing to me. I can't really figure it out. I think he was getting unpopular enough with even some of his allies that they said they needed to feed the world. But, I mean, all in all, a nuclear war of any sort is something that we don't want. You know, we had it. A very small taste of it once at the end of World War II, and we thought that really stymied it from happening or possibly happening again until now. It's very scary to me every time he gets near that nuclear reactor when he's, you know, bombing or shooting missiles or whatever you're going to say. But it's a real atrocity going on there, and we don't seem to have an abundance of smart world leaders to know how to handle this.
Let's get a final word from each of you. I'll start with you, Merrill Crowley of TraderTalk.com.
It's going to be interesting, especially with basis this year. I don't think a lot of people realize the problems that a lot of these elevators faced with their shipping and basis levels that they faced last year. Now we have higher transportation costs, less people to put to work at the elevators because it's hard to get help, and higher interest rates to increase their costs of carry, higher natural gas increases their drying costs. So it's going to be interesting to see if they're going to be able to narrow up basis like they would, or if they're going to finally stand up and say, we got to have this margin or we're not going to be in business.
Kirk Kimmel with AgMarket.net.
Next week we have that quarterly grain stocks report, and boy, I feel like it's like 2 years ago with the basis the way it is and so forth. I don't know if we're going to have those stocks around. They think we have around. If the stocks are there, they're not free stocks. If they weren't sold at a premium, they're not going to be sold at all. So that's going to be a major market maker, and the commercial scared to death to see that report. The other thing I kind of like is bacon. We're seeing a situation now where I've promoted pork lines, I've promoted ribeyes. Now I'm on the bacon kick because bacon at the wholesale is down to $1.50 a pound. So let's watch these bacon sales. It could be a good buy this fall here during pork month.
And Wayne Nelson from L&M Commodities.
One of the biggest things that's going to be happening in the next 2 weeks is actually getting some yields. You know, our first yields on beans, we saw 70 to 77 beans on a couple guys that run 2 or 3 days ahead of everybody else. Then we saw some very early or short season beans, you know, the 1.9s, something like that, and they were just barely making 50. Now we're seeing the guys in their beans and they're making 62 to 65 and pretty much in that 60 bushel range. But you just go down south, some of my friends in Arkansas, Tennessee and like that, they are 30 to 40 bushels below their APHs on their corn yields. They're a good 10 or 15 bushel below their APHs on their bean yields. It got hot as the dickens down there. It didn't rain and they spent a whole lot of money on diesel fuel, you know, irrigating those crops. So, I mean, how much is the bad going to be there and how much is the fairly good going to be there? I think that in all honesty, our next report could easily drop the yields on corn and beans. I'm not going to say a lot, but I think that they will be lower than they were on this last report.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org, willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, Kirk Kimmel of AgMarket.net out of Normal, Illinois, and Merrill Crowley of AgTraderTalk.com. In Watsika, Illinois. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.